Yo, you're listening to From the Internet, my podcast where I chat to people who I've discovered or befriended or whatever from the internet. Now, today, episode 10, chatting to Nick Gill, who's part of the Rush Hour on Triple M Adelaide. He used to play AFL footy for the Adelaide Crows, and he's made some hilarious gear online. And I didn't realise it was Nick at the time, but the first time I ever came across his work was a video called Port Adelaide versus the Bye. I'll put a link on that on my Twitter if you want to have a look at it. It's very funny stuff. He also runs the very amusing yet significantly underappreciated MS Paintstagram, which you can check out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, where he makes some really funny photos on a computer that's literally about 20 years old. He explains where he found it in the episode, and we'll explain what MS Paintstagram as a whole is. Very funny man, very easy to chat to. I started by asking Nick Gill the question I ask most people. So, what do you do for a crust?
I say I do radio, but it feels weirder when you get to customs and you say you do radio because they really want you to elaborate if you're going overseas. And, you know, you just say I do a sports radio show and then they get intrigued and then, you know, their intrigue starts worrying you because you don't know if they're probing because they're interested or if they're probing because they're going to take you into a back room or something. But that's generally what I say when I ask.
Yeah, right. You do radio. And now you're part of the drive team on Triple M Adelaide. Is that right?
Yeah, indeed, and then do a show called Dead Set Legends on Sunday mornings as well.
Yeah, cool. And was there another one, like a late night something that you were a part of?
Yeah, there's a show on Monday night we do called the Ice Bath, yeah, which is a lighter side of sport. So it's pretty much just me and a mate of mine called Adam Kiley, who's a comedian, and we just kind of take the piss out of sport. And our mantra really is to try and do a show where it doesn't matter if you don't care about the sports, because most of them you won't. It'll be like goat ice skating or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But we want to try and come up with a quirky or interesting angle on each one.
Yeah, right. Well, I know that some of my mates who are the Box of Neutrals, they do a podcast on Formula One. I don't give a shit about Formula One, but I will listen to that because I think they do a great job. So that's the same idea?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
They're probably executing it better than us, but that's our plan.
Yeah.
Whether we actually do it is another story.
Was that easy for Triple M to let you do that? Because it sounds like one of those things when you're just, you know, you just kind of go into the PD's office and you know, you're part of another, doing some other stuff already and just go, what's the chance of me and my mate just getting the late night show? Like, were they cool with it or did you have to really sell it to them or?
Look, yes, it was very easy because it's on at 9 PM on a Monday night.
Right.
Which is, you know, the graveyard of FM radio.
Yeah.
And so much so that it's supposed to be a development show. You know, you kind of develop it and try and get feedback on it and all that kind of stuff. We just got a new program director. And I sent him through a couple of the spots to try and get a little bit of feedback, see what he thought. And he's like, oh, there's a show on at 9 o'clock on Monday? So,
oh, well, obviously,
easy
it's
to
going,
get over the line and then easy to not get in trouble as well because no one actually knows it's on.
Well, I was going to say, maybe you shouldn't have sent it to him. Maybe you just should have not mentioned it. And you could have done whatever you want for the rest of your life on a Monday night and you would never have known.
Exactly. Until we make front page of the paper for something stupid.
Well, your other shows have got onto the front page of the papers. What's it like when that happens?
Well, interestingly, I assume you're referring to Andrew Jarman, who is my co-host, who said a bit of an interesting phrase about parts of his appendage. But that was the one day in the entire history of the Rush Hour, which is the afternoon drive show that I do, that I've taken off. So I broke my collarbone in three places on that weekend.
Oh, man. I didn't know. I knew that you missed it. I didn't know that was why. What are you all right? Like, what happened?
I'm fine, but I had to go get the surgery to put the plate in to repair it.
Okay.
And so I was literally unconscious when that went to air. But it would be my job to edit that sort of stuff out.
Yeah.
So, it was not a good situation to be in around the station at the time.
Well, tell me what happened when you woke up, like the first, like you wake up from surgery, which is a pretty big deal, and you say to the doctor, how did it go? And the doctor and the surgeon's like, oh, it's great. We inserted the steel thing. By the way, while you're out, here's the newspaper, and you go, Jesus Christ.
I actually had four messages that I woke up to, because I woke up pretty late at night, about midnight.
Yeah.
Most of them with attached audio, and three of them said, word for word, exactly the same thing, and it was just, you go away for one day, ...
Well, is that kind of nice that it, you know, when it comes time to renegotiate the contract or whatever comes up and you just go, wow, if you don't have me here, this is the kind of shit that's going to happen.
Look, if I was the kind of guy to try and cash in on somebody getting suspended for a week Ripping bloke. On the front page ripping of the paper bloke. Is, what was that?
You'd be a ripping bloke. That'd be great.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, hey, so the station's crumbling around us as a result of an error that somebody else did because it's not normally their job. What's the kind of cash in it for me?
What's in it for me?
Yeah.
Now, you used to play AFL, right?
Briefly.
Yeah. How many games did you play? Tell us about your AFL career.
Well, career is generous. Let's start with that.
Okay.
I like to say I played nearly 18 games. So I played 17, but I was on Melbourne Demons list, first of all, and then I went to the Kangaroos and I was on their list. I didn't play games for either of those. And then I went to the Crows by the time I was 24 years old now, and I did my hamstring on the first day, which turned out being a six-month injury, and I nearly got the record as the only AFL player to have been at three clubs with no games.
Far out. So then you finally... Tell us about that, because I guess it's weird. Like, when you watch the TV and the newspapers and this guy's played his 200th and this guy's played his 100th and stuff like that, but getting that first game is most... teenager's dream is to play AFL, and all you need to do is play one AFL game, and for the rest of your life you can say I played AFL. So being so close, does it even make it harder to not have quite got there just yet? Were there times when you're like, shit, I'm never going to get a game here?
Yeah, for sure. When I got delisted from the Kangaroos, you know, I'd been at two clubs already. I didn't have a particularly good year. To a degree, I knew that it was over at that stage. You know, I'd had my go. It turned out that I probably wasn't good enough, and I'd tried my little butt off. So when I got delisted from that club, then I thought, well, it's over. And it was only 3 years later that I got picked up by the Crows and then got really, really lucky and finally played 2 weeks shy of my 25th birthday. And you're right. Once I stepped out onto Etihad Stadium and it was my first game, I thought, well, I've ticked that off. I can kind of press on now.
Yeah. you're an AFL player for the rest of your life. Does that mean...
Well, sort of, except that the Crows' policy on being a pass player is 25 games.
Really?
So technically, I'm not even one of those.
Why? How is that even... Like, is that normal for most clubs? Or how does that even... That seems so strange, right?
Well, just to be listed as one of the people who get the perks of being a past player. Now,
what is the perk of a past player?
What was that?
What is the perk of being a past player?
Oh, they invite you to various functions, like reunions and gala dinners, season openers, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty good. But they've been kind enough to actually do that for me because I was around for 3 years and just got a lot of injuries. But I guess there's a lot of guys who are on between 1 and 25 games who maybe haven't had the same kindness offered to them. I don't know.
Yeah, far out. Do you think... It's a very tricky one to answer. But, like, when you do stuff on Triple M, like your late-night Monday show and the Sunday show and on Drive and stuff, compared to, say... Andrew Jarman, people, like listeners, wouldn't refer to you as like former AFL player, would they?
No, really. And most people, if they do remember how I went, they remember that I was mainly just a terrible kick. so, you know, that's the memory that's instilled inside of them. So much so that I was living in Cairns to start my radio career a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it was 3 years after I finished AFL, right? And I'm an absolute nobody. I've only played 17 games. And I get a call from a guy from The Age. And he goes, oh, hey, Nick, how are you going? It's someone or other from The Age. How are you doing? And he goes, I'm just doing an article on Lindsay Thomas and his goal kicking. I was like, oh, yeah. And he sounded really sheepish about it. And he goes, and I'm just, you know, trying to speak to a few people about what they think about the goal kicking and stuff, and he was really mincing his words, and I said, look, mate, I know it was a terrible kick for goal, just feel free to ask whatever questions you like.
He wanted to get an expert comment from someone who's also a terrible kick and goal. Is that what he's getting there?
He used the phrase, he wanted to get an insider's view of what it's like to be terrible at kicking for goal.
What was your goals to points to no score, like from your 17 games?
I don't know exactly, but there was certainly more points than goals.
Okay, right.
That's pretty much been a trend over my entire career. So less than 50%, which is pretty atrocious, to be honest.
When you're at Cairns and also in Hobart, you were on like the hit stream, or it was called the Today stream then, which is, you know, your younger hit music, Kardashian kind of stuff. Do you think that, like obviously being a former AFL whatever has its benefits being on Triple M and stuff, but do you think you could be pigeonholed into that and maybe it would have been harder to get those younger jobs if you had played more?
To be honest, I was trying to shun that in order to try and get into radio.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, and that's maybe a good thing for one part of your career that you didn't sort of already make a name for yourself somewhere else.
Yeah, to a degree, I think it helped. I was doing journalism with Channel 7 at the time, and it was sports journalism. And right. I felt as exactly that, as though it was maybe slightly pigeonholing me. And then I went to SAFM at the time, which is now Hit 107, and said, oh, look, I'd love to do radio. And they said, look, they were quite honest. They said, look, mate, you're a sports personality, and you don't have as much of a profile as pretty much everybody else who's trying to get a job here. So, you know, we don't really need another sports guy who doesn't have that big a name. And I said that what I wanted to do was actually just general content and nothing to do with football. And I wanted to get on SAFM just to do general content, you know, like a breakfast show or a drive show or something like that. And that's when their ears perked up. And then they gave me a job as the sports guy.
But is that like, well, I guess convenient to... Is that just a little opening before you got the full-time gig in Cairns? And was it an easy choice to leave Adelaide and go to Cairns like I've done and many people do? They move to the country to, you know, get their first brekkie gig or...
Well, I don't know. Would you say that it was easy? I don't know if it was an easy move.
No, but I didn't have SAFM or... Like, I didn't know anyone. So any move was just a good move for me, whereas it seems that you... Like, if you're already doing some stuff for Seven and SAFM, to leave that, that might be a bit harder. Because for me, leaving an accounting firm was quite easy.
Fair enough. Look, to be honest, I just walked into the national boss's office after having done a year of, you know, 2 3-minute spots a week, the lighter side of sport, and said, I want a breakfast show and I'm willing to go anywhere. Just send me somewhere because I want to learn how to do radio.
Yeah, cool.
And he said, well, a job's come up in Cairns. You have to start in 2 weeks. Are you good with that? I said, yep, that's fine. And then off I went.
Fine. And was it as simple as that? Like, you just wanted that really badly? Because, it was easy for me to leave my job in accounting, sure, but just the actual physically moving around, it's tricky. It's tough.
It is. You know, it was one of those situations where the gusto that you say the word doesn't represent the butterflies in your stomach.
Yeah.
You know, I picture myself storming into the boss and going, I will go anywhere and I will take any job inside. I'm like, gosh, I hope it's good. I hope it's close. Maybe I can stay in Adelaide, give me some good cash.
Yeah.
But Cairns was fun, you know. It was a great place. It was a good start. And I'm glad that I did what I did.
Yeah, cool. And then from there, how long were you in Cairns before down to Tassie?
So I was in Cairns for 8 months. And thankfully, it was winter. Being a pasty, freckly guy, winter's probably a good option for Cairns because it's about 26 and sunny. And then down to Hobart, which was freezing cold after 8 months. And I was there for 14 months before I headed back to Adelaide.
Yeah, cool. And did... Because I've worked in New South Wales and Queensland. And me, I like talking about AFL. But even being on the not sporty network that's Today Network, Hit Network, I still like being in an AFL state. Did it make a big difference to you being in Hobart, being able to sneak in a few footy stories here and there, compared to being in Cairns, where you just would never ever mention AFL, or GAFL as they call it?
Yeah, for sure. My biggest fear, and I've actually had nightmares about this, is getting, you know, the dream gig that everyone's going for, to try and get a job in Sydney on breakfast or something like that.
Yeah.
And then somebody expecting me to know anything about NRL. And I've actually woken up, you know, in cold sweats because somebody's asked me a question and I had no idea whoever the superstar of the game is. Like, somebody's talking about Jonathan Thurston and in the dream I have no idea who that guy is or what he does. And then everyone laughs at me and I lose my job and go back to Cairns.
Yeah, far out. It's so strange to think that, like, Melbourne and Sydney, you know, they're the two biggest cities, but it's such an... especially in Melbourne, if you didn't know a lot about AFL, you would struggle, I reckon.
Yeah, for sure. And
would that be the same in Adelaide? Adelaide's similar?
Yeah, if you didn't know anything about AFL, particularly on the Triple M station over here, then you would just be in all sorts. And, you know, there's guys who do, say, music shifts and things like that, who just feign, you know, their passion for football, who I know have done that in the past. Nobody who's on there now, they're actual football fans. But they've got to, because otherwise you seem like a bit of an outcast. And I assume it would be the same in Melbourne and Sydney. How did you go being an AFL fan in Queensland and New South Wales?
Oh, man. Well, I just remember that I always said I went for the Melbourne Storm. Because I'm from Melbourne and I used to be an accountant, so I like the creativity of their payroll. Because it was just then that it happened that they got all the, you know, they lost their premierships to the salary caps and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you can kind of get into it. Like I'd force myself on Friday night to watch the Broncos game and go to a few games and read all the papers and stuff. But I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like, oh yeah, I've probably got away with this. But that's probably just like my ego. Like, I reckon if I listen back now, or that if someone from Queensland came to Western Australia and they were like, oh, I think I'm getting away with this AFL thing, but then you can spot a phony a mile away when they're talking about that, and the ability to throw back to be like, oh well, you know that thing. Well, he did that 2.5 years ago against that other team. Like, I reckon you can tell pretty quickly. So I feel like I got away with it at the time, but looking back, I don't think I did a great job.
Yeah, and it's the vernacular as well. Like, there might be a subtle difference between whether you call it a punt or a kick.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, he threw it to that other player. Maybe that's not the term that they use. And, yeah, you're right, the history is the big one. Like, the superstars of the game, when you compare it to them and things like that. If you don't have that upbringing of the information, you can't just Wikipedia rugby.
Yeah.
And then kind of fill yourself in on all of that.
Yeah, so we'd probably just... I just wouldn't talk about it as much. Like, I guess you can... It's good to talk about the footy on the Monday morning and stuff like that, but then on a hit station, you can kind of get away with not.
Yeah,
if there's
sure.
not a huge story. But I remember one time, who was it? Wally Lewis, who is like the biggest name in rugby. Huge is Wally Lewis. And they said, oh, and it was one of these last minute, like, oh, we've teed up Wally Lewis for an interview before the State of Origin. Can you want to chat to him in 15? And we're like, yeah, of course. And then I kind of looked him up online and I just saw that he had a massive moustache. And I was like, what a legend. And I was like 2 days into, maybe it was, just, I don't know when it was, but I just started to like sprinkle a little bit of beard and moustache myself. So I ended up just getting moustache tips off him for a few minutes. And he was really great and he was really funny. Maybe it was a relief for him to not talk about the game as much. And then I was just like, well, thanks for the tips, Wally. And of course, State of Origin, Channel 9 tonight from 7:30. And I don't know, again, I thought I got away with it, but probably a lot of people listening going, who's this dickhead talking about mustaches?
Oh, man, you've probably done a good job. You've done better than, like... So what was it like playing for the Brisbane Broncos between 2001 and 2007?
Yeah. It was great.
Excellent. Wally Lewis, thank you. State of Origin tonight from 9 o'clock.
Tell me a bit about... You're currently at Triple M Adelaide, and Adelaide's your hometown, right?
No, I actually was born in Sydney and raised in Melbourne.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe it's just you being at the Crows made me think you were an Adelaide guy.
Well, I've been here for 10 years.
Oh,
and
cool.
Anything that I've done in the media has been based through anything that I've done in Adelaide. So,
how old were you when you... So, when you grew up in Sydney, when did you move to Melbourne?
I was 2 when I moved to Melbourne, so I don't have a lot of memories.
Yeah, so you're like, you would say you grew up in Melbourne and you're like a Melbourne guy.
Yeah, so, I would say I'm a Melbourne guy, but I use it to my advantage either way. Like, if the State of Origin's on, I'll say that I'm a Blue through and through.
Yeah, born in Sydney, guys.
Because there's no Victorian option. And then if something comes up and Sydney sucks for whatever reason, all of a sudden I'm a Melbourne guy again. Yeah. So it's quite handy.
Yeah, no, that is quite convenient and well played. So who were you like a radio nut when you were younger? Who did you used to listen to? And yeah.
I used to love the Crud team. So it was Julian Schiller and Tony Moclair.
The Crud team?
Yeah, I think they're on Fox in Melbourne.
Really?
Yeah, and now they actually do, some of them do half serious, half fun stuff still, but those two have been floating around doing quite a bit of stuff. And when I got my first ever taste was, there was a competition where they were doing South Park, but they were getting listeners to call in and do impressions of South Park characters to make a show called Crud Park.
Yeah, right.
And I won the Cartman auditions, and then I got to go into the studio and do Cartman in this little script that they put together.
Oh, man.
And I thought, man, this is the best.
And just that first little taste, and you were just like, yep, this is sick.
Yeah, but I was 13, I reckon, and then it wasn't for another, 15 years before I got into radio.
Did you kind of know when you were playing, because obviously when you're playing footy between the ages of 16 and 20, you're training hard and that's your life or whatever, but did you even know then that you wanted to do media stuff and you like the comedy side of things?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in media to start with. It took me actually quite a while. So when I was still playing for the Crows, I used to go in one day a week with Channel 7
yep.
and learn how to do sports reporting. And then I broke my leg in my last year at the Crows, right at the start of the year, and knew that this would be the end.
Yeah, right.
Like, I knew that I'd be out for 3.5 months, which would be pretty much the end of the season. I was getting old, and I would probably be delisted because I wasn't that good. So I started doing more with Channel 7, got a job with them, and then worked there for 2 years, and then thought, It's just not immediate enough for me. You know, you spend 10 hours of the day to put together a two-minute package.
Yeah, right.
And I enjoyed that, but I wanted to have something a bit more spontaneous, a bit more fun, and a bit more immediate. So that's when I tried to get into radio and loved it.
Yeah, so when I was asking about Adelaide being your hometown, because for most people who are from a city of sorts, doing brekkie in their hometown is the gig. And so for me, I'm from Melbourne, Triple M Melbourne brekkie. That's what I listened to growing up when it was Peter Berner and it was the Cage, Tim Smith, Parko, those guys. Brayshaw was on as well. And I was like, this is great. This is so good. And they used to have Marty Sheargold on Drive. So I just love Triple M Melbourne. So for me, that would be like the dream gig. So what's your dream gig? Or are you, like I'm starting to get to now, go, well, you can't predict anything, so I'll just take what I can get?
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, yes. I don't know what the dream gig is anymore because I'm the same. I would love to get back to Melbourne and I'd love to do Triple M or Fox and do a breakfast show or do a drive show. Now, the drive show side of things, it seems to be a bit looser and a little bit more fun, which really appeals to me.
Yep.
But, you know, having said that, there's so many people taking so many different paths now with the dawn of the digital age that you don't know where you're going to go. Maybe there's going to be a huge digital star at some stage in the near future, or maybe a YouTube show will take off or something like that. So I don't know exactly what the ultimate show is, but my dream of doing radio when I was younger was the music side of it all.
Really?
Because
when I think of you, I know you've done a lot of skits and stuff, and that I think the first audio I've ever heard of you was doing a skit, so I always assumed, and then you saying before about the Crud show, I thought you were like a comedy content man.
Yeah, no, my biggest passion in life is music by far. I do a lot of writing and things like that, and my dream show was always to be able to play songs that I loved and then talk at length about them, you know, both with listeners and just on the air. But it turns out that that job doesn't exist in radio. Like,
yeah.
It's all taken care of by a music director who researches through study groups and then kind of puts songs on in a certain rotation and things like that. So the job doesn't really exist. So I love what I do, but the job that I would have loved to do as a kid, just it isn't in the landscape.
Is there anything else? Well, obviously, if you're doing Drive most days, a Monday night show and a weekend show, you're pretty full up. Apart from Emist Paintstagram, which we'll get to soon, is there any other little side projects or things that you're interested in, or like you were saying, like digital shows and digital content, is there any other things you do or would like to do?
I play a lot of music, as I said.
Yep.
So playing bands and things like that. Do a lot of music writing, and I really enjoy that. My problem is that I can't really sing, and so anything that I write, you've got to present to a singer in order to do it for you.
Yeah,
but you've got to do it with your voice to convey the melody that you want to get across.
Really? Oh, so you sort of, and with it, even though you don't want to be the final product singer, you still need to be able to sing to share how it works.
Yeah. So and the problem is, because I can't sing, it would be like taking a crayon painting to Van Gogh or something and just going, mate, this is what I want you to do for
this
me.
Is what I had in mind, champ. So
yeah. It's just this horrible scribble. Could you just make that sound good? That'd be great.
Yeah, right.
Also, the lyrics here, they're about heartbreak from a personal experience. If you could just convey that pain in your voice, that'd be ideal as well. Cheers, bud.
Yeah, I know I have a similar like, I feel the pain you're sharing because I wish I was greater than, but I can't really do character like voices or accents and stuff like that. And,
yeah.
But I love writing skits or little radio plays that have characters and accents. And then, so when I'm in the VO booth and I'm trying to explain, like, oh, and you're supposed to sound like American like this. And then they're like, well, why are you speaking in Russian? And I'm like, well, I just don't know what it's supposed to sound like. But if you do it, I'll know that it's right or wrong.
Good. So it sounds like you're a good director then.
Yeah, well, that's what I usually just give it to the audio guy. And I'm like, you know what I mean, right? And he goes, sort of. And I go, oh, okay, we'll just go with that. And you do what you tell him what you need to tell him.
Yeah. I always feel as though that there should be more filters or something to be able to manipulate your voice to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, audio guy, just put the like American accent filter on.
On him, yeah, just put the accent on him. Jeez,
yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Is that even, like, that would be a great tool to have, wouldn't it?
Surely it's an app. Everything's an app.
Look for that right now. I'm going to find that app. Tell me about MS Am I getting it right? Paintstagram or MSTagram? Whatever this thing is.
Look, I forgive you because it's the most cumbersome handle that I've ever seen on Instagram. I thought it was really smart to start with because it's MS Paint and it's on Instagram. But then to have two T's, so you have the MS Paint and then st again, not many people can actually work out how to spell it. So if I had my time again, I would probably make it MS Paintagram, which I've since found out is a guy who's posted one picture 3 years ago.
How annoying is that when you find a mad handle and you're like, but he's not using it. Just give it to me. Like, for instance, on Instagram, Ryan John, one word, is taken by someone who hasn't posted for 5 or 10 years, so I'm Ryan.John, whereas everything else is just Ryan John, and that shits me to no end so bad. And I just want to, like, call Instagram on their, you know, 1-300-INSTAGRAM, how can we help? Yeah, mate, this dickhead's not using the account. I want it real bad. Give it to me. But it doesn't quite work like that.
Yeah, and what do? Are you going to, like, put a comment on one of his posts or something?
I have actually done that.
And what did you say?
He is not using his account so much that he doesn't even get the message, because you have to log in to get the message, which is like even more frustrating.
Yeah. It would be even worse if they had heaps of followers, because then you would just wash into the thousands of people who are commenting on the photo.
Yeah, but it's not the case. He's just not checking it. But so, all right, well, the name aside, tell me why you thought this would be a good investment of your time. And I'm saying that because it is a good thing, because I find it hilarious, but I don't know, maybe I'm the niche crowd.
I don't know. I was on Gumtree, you know, searching 90s computers, as one does.
Yep.
And I saw that there was a lot of Windows 95 capable computers available at pretty good prices.
pretty good prices, guys.
Well, they're actually slightly too expensive, to be honest.
Really?
Not many of them were selling, because they were trying to sell what were refurbished Windows 95 capable computers for like $100. But, really? You know, a computer loses almost all of its value in the first year or so.
Yeah, that's really strange that it's that much. So, and you still paid the money.
Well, I got him down to 50.
Yeah, but he was dreaming.
Yeah, I'll say. But you've got to get it in that Goldilocks zone of computers, like old enough that it loses all its value because it's obsolete, but not so old that it's retro cool.
Yeah, right, because then it starts getting expensive then, yep.
Yeah, and I wanted a computer around that time because I don't like the newer versions of MS Paint. Like, their intended improvements seem to have made it far too functional for me to use.
Yeah, righto.
So when I was growing up and I started using MS Paint pretty relentlessly, it was that time that I wanted to recapture and do these stupid little cartoons on there. So they're all single cells. It's generally got one speech bubble in it, and then I try and have some kind of social observation on each one.
Yeah, and the I'm not sure when I'm going to publish this podcast, but the day we are recording this is sort of the week after the whole Adam Good scenario.
Yes.
And would you say this is the most viewed picture you've ever made, because it was shared by not only your own accounts but Triple M Adelaide's?
Yeah, it was. We had 150,000 reach or something with the post. So it was good that everybody has seen it, but it also started leading to people posting things like, if you see the cartoon, it's
I was going to say,
cartoons are never great when you describe them.
No, but please, just give us the basics.
It's four cells, and so it's two guys sitting at the football, and they're both booing in the first cell, and then the second one, they're still booing. In the third one, they're still booing, and then the fourth one, the guy turns to his friend and goes, "Whoa, man, ease up. That last boo sounded a little bit racist."
Well, which I saw it the first time, and I chuckled out loud, because I am... Yeah, I don't know. It seems like it's a ridiculous little thing that's become something that it probably shouldn't have been. And was that? I'm guessing that's the point you were trying to convey as well.
Pretty much. Regardless of what anyone thinks about what the booing is about, it's ridiculous to speculate that an entire group of people could 100% be booing for the same reason.
Yeah.
Some people are probably booing because they are racist. Some people are probably booing because they don't like it for other reasons. Other people are probably booing because everyone else is, and it seems like the thing to do.
Everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just going to jump on board. Like, maybe they're one of those people who are from New South Wales and they've come down to a game and they're like, oh, this is what happens with the AFL.
Yeah, so...
give a boo.
When we're recording this, 2,500 likes, 600 shares, a whole stack of comments, and they're pretty varied. And I guess this topic as a whole, it's I've never seen a news item split the community as much as this one has. What was it tough to... for the bosses to say, oh no, you can share this, or did you have to say, oh, I just made this cool thing, can I post it? Was there a discussion, or did you just chuck it up and there it goes?
I had a discussion with a guy who does our social media, Ian Hayden, and he said, yeah, I'll put it up, no worries. And then we had to monitor it really, really hard because, yeah, as you said, it was a sensitive issue. And a lot of people started saying, oh, Triple M, the racist station, and then other people were really enjoying it. And then, as always happens, one of the comment wars just starts and personal attacks just start coming thick and fast, which don't have anything to do with the original post.
Yeah. Yeah,
they'll just, I don't know what these people do, but like somebody does a comment against you, so you obviously click on their profile, you go in, find out some weak spot, and then attack them.
And then you go them. And then you go them.
Yeah.
You go them hard.
And then it just escalates, and you have no idea how all this sort of stuff started, but there's death threats all of a sudden between two of your listeners because they have a slightly different opinion of a cartoon.
Far out.
Yeah, but it was interesting to see because obviously different people are affected by it in different ways, and the racism angle, I can't really know what it's like for somebody who's been brought up as an Indigenous person or maybe as a minority or something, because I haven't been. And so I don't know how maybe a cartoon like that could affect somebody, but whatever it is in life, I always kind of like to have a laugh at it.
Yeah, because I did a skit on it, right, which is sort of similar to what you've done, and...
Well, take us through it. What was the premise?
A man has been booed to death.
Yeah, good.
Not as in he was booed and then something about, like, he literally, the boos, like, I had a medical expert explain how the air at such force when being booed can hit and bruise, and after so much bruising, it can actually kill someone. and it was like a Today Tonight story where there was someone from the heckling unit was an expert. We had an ambulance officer. There was a man who was on the scene who saw it happen. And the guy was being booed because he tied up his shoelaces. He did the loop, swoop, and pull, whereas everyone knows the bunny ears is the way to go.
I just quickly, loop, swoop, and pull is better.
Yeah, or maybe it was that way around. Well, you would get booed for that kind of fucking attitude, mate. And anyway, so, and then one.
So, what kind of response did you have?
Well, some people just straight up, because I was like, this is a ridiculous situation and I just want to highlight the ridiculousness of it by doing this thing. And some people were just like, oh, I don't think that's a topic you should be joking about. And I'm like, well, what else am I going to do? Like, and then one of my favorite lines in it was, they said to the man, oh, what color were his shoelaces? And the guy goes, oh, I'm colorblind. I couldn't even see what color they were, but who cares anyway? We're talking about loop, swoop, and pull etiquette.
Oh, what a crazy social overtone that you've got in there subtly.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, that's a great little dig about, and then the fact that you're getting all angry about shoelace tie, and like, I don't know, I just love the ridiculousness of it. But some people are just like, oh, you can't joke about it. It's racism, man. Like, it's not up for joking. Like, you just can't joke about it. I'm like, well, I have, and a lot of people did find it funny. But I don't know, you can't please them all, I guess.
No, you can't. And yeah, I got a number of tweets, same sort of thing. Like, can't believe that you're joking about this. This isn't a laughing matter. And I actually accompanied my cartoon originally with a post that said, look, regardless of what you think of Adam Goods, it's obviously a mental well-being issue now, so let's stop booing. But a lot of people just saw the cartoon in isolation and had a dig. But, yeah, some people are fairly sensitive about it, and some people understandably are selfish about it because they've probably got a background that has allowed them to see it in a totally different light, one that I can't appreciate and maybe should be more sensitive about.
Yeah, well, for me, I've never been a big Adam Goods fan since he kind of dived and stomped on Josh Gibson's ankle like a few years ago. And I'm like, I go for Hawthorn, and Josh Gibson's one of my favourite players.
So it's personal for you.
It's deep and it's personal, but it's significantly not racist. Like, he jumped on this guy and hit him in the ankle. And like, and I don't think Gibson played the week. Like, he kind of injured him pretty bad, and it was a bit of a dog move. So
you and the girl from the Pussycat Dolls, like, was just ropeable.
The three of us, were disgusted. But then I kind of hate that the people who are on my side, who are, like, the side of I booing him because I don't like him, then they go, yeah, it's not because I'm racist. It's because I don't like him. For instance, this stuff that he did with it was, and then start talking about race as their example. And I'm like, no, don't be on my team. This, you are a terrible, shut up. Like, I've got a very genuine non-racist thing. And they're like, it's not racist. I just want to talk about that time when he called out the girl about racism. I'm like, bro, that's pretty much racist. Like, that's what it is.
And what you're saying is reflecting upon me.
Yeah, you're representing me. Don't represent me.
Yeah, it's like in a pub where you like point at someone when you're saying something that no one is supporting, and you just point at some random guy and go, he knows what I'm talking about. And you've brought that dude onto your side somehow. He probably hates you for it.
There will never be a time when I say, this is my opinion, I will explain it, but instead, here's Alan Jones and Steve Price. Because they did a bloody shit job of it. Is there any, because you've made a bit of skits and you do a lot and you like doing fun stuff, has there been a skit or something that you've made and regretted, or a picture or anything like that? Because I know, same as your picture, I did the skit, and there, whilst I stand by it now and I know you will for yours, there were a few moments where I went, oh shit, should I just delete this?
Look, there's been two videos in particular where I've genuinely got death threats from, and I don't regret them as such, because I think in media you've got to have a bit of a thick skin because people are going to have a go with you.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what they were in a second, but they started getting really specific. Like, there was this one guy in the YouTube comments, and he goes, oh, mate, how about we meet at the Golden Grove BWS tonight, mate, and I'll bash your friggin' head in. Like, it's just a bad offer.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you
know
what?
It's a long way to drive from Adelaide to start with, and I don't want to have to waste the money on petrol. I'm not really a BWS guy, and to get my head bashed in, it just seems like a bad deal for me.
Yeah, not only is BWS prices way too high, but I personally aren't the type that loves getting their head kicked in, so...
Exactly. Like, they were key points, but they were... The two that I've received death threats from were both about Port Adelaide. So to explain for people outside of Adelaide, there's a huge rivalry between the Crows and Port Power.
Yeah.
And it's just so fiery. And I did... Port were going terribly. They'd lost 7 in a row. And then they had a bye. And with a mate of mine,
remember
Adam
this.
Kylie,
this was so good. Yeah, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, so a mate of mine, Adam Kylie, and I put together this video of Port Adelaide versus the bye. And we hashed together all this footage where no other player was in shot. And they were kicking to one another and they couldn't score. They kept missing. And then there was a rush behind. So the bye got a score and they lost by a point. And, you know, the commentary was just stuff like, the matchup between Daniel Pearce and nobody was sure to excite. And I don't know, it got, 250,000 views or something like that. But it also got a lot of death threats. And then
that's
the other
so strange, because it's not even like, it's clearly a joke. There's no line of like, oh, geez, he's having a real crack there, but I think he's joking. It's like, it can't be more obvious.
I know. And then the other one was exactly the same. Maybe I should stop having a go at Port Adelaide. But it was, so before each game, Port Adelaide, just before the siren play, Never Tear Us Apart by
NXS. Yeah.
And that's the lead up to the game. And this is going to be a long and boring story. They used to, back when they played at Amy Stadium, when they didn't have enough people, they had this system, which nobody noticed, I'm sure, where they would just put these enormous tarps over half the seats. So
what,
the
just
people
to
who
fill
did
it
go
out
to
a
the
little.
Games were crammed together, and it looked a lot fuller than it actually was.
Oh, and they had like advertising or like just go port signs or something
like
that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
stuff like that. And so I changed Never Tear Us Apart to Never Tear Us Our Tarp. Tear Up Our Tarp. And just was talking about how now they suck again and, you know, they've still got their tarps in storage ready to go for when the crowd starts leaving.
And again, what, they just fired up? They hated that?
Oh, massively. And again, there's no way that can't be a joke. People were saying that, like, NXS should sue me. People were saying that Port Adelaide should sue me. I didn't want to get into their legal backgrounds, but I'm not sure what grounds you can do that.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. And if you could be sued on that, Jesus Christ, imagine the shit like that would be able to come out of that. And I actually remember, it took me, it wasn't until a few years after you made it, but I remember watching that buy video and just thinking, shit, that was good. That was really good. How long did it take to make it?
We ended up making a theme song for the buy in the end as well, which was good fun to do, just to have one of the, you know, the burly singing man just, you know.
Yeah.
We are the team without a name.
How long did it take to make that? Because obviously going through all the footage to find it with no other, like, that would take a while, right?
Yeah, particularly the all-ground shots. know, we found this one shot, this one golden shot where Port Adelaide were almost in position and the other team hadn't come out yet. I've no idea where we found it or how. But, yeah, it took ages just to be able to find that footage and then hash it together. And then because we wrote the script before we found the videos, that took even longer because you had to find someone kicking back into the back line and then it going over the goal line to be a rush behind.
Far out. Well, so, yeah. I'm glad we've got a chance to talk about this to justify and to get some more hits on it because, like, there's nothing worse than putting heaps of time in and people are like, oh, that looked pretty shit.
Yeah, I know. But people, they don't care. You always want to play something more, even if it's terrible, just because you put heaps of time into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same with the MS Paintstagram cartoon.
Well, like, how long does it take to make a picture like that?
Well, it depends. Most of them take between an hour and 2 hours. But people go, oh, just give us more cartoons. And it's just, wow.
If you want to come over here and draw them for me, champ, I'll happily put some more out.
If I have to draw more than three people, because people are the thing that take ages, then it's at least a two-hour job. So it takes a little while. And then, yeah, they look terrible, though. Like, they're not even that good. So you can't go, geez, look at the labour of love that I've put into this. I've put in so much work to make it look good. And it just doesn't. They look like, I don't know, rejects from The Simpsons.
Nah, don't talk yourself down, Nick Gill. I am a big fan of MS Paintstagram, and I'll stand by them. I will defend them even if you won't.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. One more question before we wrap this up. Obviously, I know a lot of people ask me, and I don't know if you get the same thing as well, but they kind of, and because we've both moved around a little bit for work, and like my friends and family will just go, oh, so, you know, what's next? And my answer now is, well, I don't fucking know, because if there's one thing I do know about radio is that you can't really predict anything. But what would you say to, like, when you first started out, is there any advice you'd give to, like, your younger self, even if you were just finishing up footy or maybe when you were 13 and helping out with the crud show? Any advice? Because I know that, like, I always change my mind on how I'd answer that question because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think what somebody is buying from you, and by buying I mean paying you to do a job,
yeah,
in the end I think is they're buying your personality. And the thing that I've probably learned over the last few years is that if you're not yourself, and this sounds really cliched, if you're not presenting your exact personality as is, maybe slightly more animated than you normally are, mm-hmm. then not only are you betraying yourself, but you've got to kind of remember the lies that you've told. And I don't mean bad lies or anything like that, but what are the personality traits that you've pretended to be you over the years? You've got to kind of follow through with those to create an identity that people can attach to.
Yeah.
And so it took me a while, certainly all of Cairns and most of Hobart, to realise that you've got to give a little bit of yourself, open up, but be true about it in order for people to be able to attach themselves to you and enamour themselves to you. Because if you're not, sounds really lame coming out of my mouth, if you're not real and you're not yourself, then it goes the same as socially. If you're just a fake person, no one's going to actually really feel any warmth from you, really feel any connection to you. And it goes the same for radio. They can feel it. They can sense it if you're lying. And they're not dumb, the audience. They work out exactly whether you're going to have opinions which vary so vastly on different issues, which are contradictory to things that you said beforehand.
Do you reckon it's a lot easier to, because now when you start in radio, we want you to be real. And you go, yep, got it. But is it actually quite difficult to be, it's a lot easier to say be real than it is to do? Or is it just a matter of just like lowering down your wall sort of thing and just accepting it?
It is to a degree. And you've got to polish the you up to a degree. Like anyone does, there's things that you would say to mates, which are you, that you just can't say on radio.
Yeah, I often do a little improv off-air stand-up set in the office because I'm like, here's the gangs that I will never be able to tell on the radio.
Yeah. And so, and then if your content director or program director comes and goes, well, you shouldn't have said that. You're like, you said be real. Yeah. This is what I'm like at a barbecue. you've brought this upon yourself, I'm sorry.
Well, that's what I said to the girl at the club, the boss, so that's what the story goes like.
Yeah. Sure, we've broken a few guidelines and we're about to lose our license, but really, you told me to be real and that's what I did. No, but you're right. It does take a while to work out exactly how to do that and put it together. But each time that you start talking about yourself and opening up a little bit, you learn more about yourself and how to deliver that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that is really good advice. And it does take a while to figure out. I still have moments where I listen back and just go, that sounded fucking a bit shit.
Yeah. Oh, man, listening back to your early days is just hilarious.
Yeah, and
it's like the early Simpsons episodes. You know, the voices were terrible. They were poorly drawn. The storylines weren't entertaining, and neither were the lines. And you're like, how did they get a second season of that? I look back on my early days and listen to the audio and go, why did they invite me back for another week and give me a job? It's ridiculous.
Do you think, did you at the time, like I did at the time, think you were pretty good though?
Yes, I did. Because I don't know if you had this as well. At the start of radio, you may have had a number of ideas that you'd always wanted to execute on air.
Yep.
But you felt as though there was a finite number of ideas that would come out of you, and you're like, oh, I don't want to waste that one.
Yeah, I'm still like that now. I'm like, oh, I might save that for Tuesday's show because, like, I don't know, like I'll run out of... My ultimate fear is running out of stories and ideas and coming in the morning and just going, oh, God.
There it is. There is a finite number of
And what, you've been hanging on to ideas for years and then you finally drop them and you're like, oh, there it is.
That wasn't that great. The one I came up with immediately this morning off the back of a news story was a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, far out. Well, Nick, thank you very much for your time, man. This has been a lot of fun. Tell us where we can find you on Twitter and also MS Paintstagram. If I feel like that's something worth plugging.
Yeah, look, if you can spell it, it's like MSPAINTSTAGRAM.
I'll put a link on places, but what, that's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as well.
Yeah. So Instagram and Facebook are probably the easiest places to go.
Yeah, and yourself.
So get around it, Nick H Gill on Twitter if you want to get around me there as well.
Cool, and don't forget, guys, the ice bath Monday nights,
9 p.m. run time.
All right, thanks for the chat, Nick.
No, Ryan. Cheers, mate.